Hi folks, Graham Sutherland here, 21st Century Jackabout. 10 minutes late in getting on air tonight, which is it's not unusual. Nevertheless, on air. Beautiful summer's day today in Scotland. Absolutely beautiful. Very warm though, sticky, clammy kind of weather. I'm not used to that. But the strangest thing is the fact that it never ever gets dark. Even at 11 o'clock at night, we were out the other night, I think last night or the night before, at 11 p.m. and it was still daylight. You could actually still see. I mean, it wasn't broad daylight, obviously. It was kind of twilight, but you could still see enough to work, which is fine. Well, it's lovely, you know, but it doesn't help you trying to sleep. If you're trying to, you know, you've got a hormone in your blood, it kicks in and with darkness. So, melatonin. So if you don't have that, you're going to have difficulty sleeping. So, but yeah, that's what happens when you're this far north, I'm afraid. That's just how it goes. Anyway, we're going to do a show about the craze that's sweeping America right now. And they're trying to introduce it in this country. And it's the drag queen story hour, basically. And there's been a lot of stuff online about it. There's been a lot of consternation and, you know, discussion about it and everything. And for some reason, I don't know why, I mean, these aren't even ordinary drag queens, like, really over the top. I thought it was a craze that was just going to die down, but it's not. It's picked up momentum and sweeping right across. And I was expecting a backlash. I was expecting a counter movement. And it started. Mother has started a campaign called 500 Mothers Against the Drag Queen Hour, the Story Hour. So basically what it is it's basically just a transvestite reading stories to kids with false eyelashes and fake boobs and lots of makeup on and stuff like that. But I'm talking about young kids. I'm talking about prepubescent kids. We're not talking about, you know, teenagers here. We're talking about 6 and 7 year olds who are just forming an opinion about, just at that stage where they're just forming an opinion about life and everything. I think it's quite disgusting, to be frank. It's utterly shocking. Now, there's a bit of weight behind it. That's the thing that's bothering me. There's a bit of weight behind it because there's conscientious objectors that have said, no, I'm not having my kid attend these things. I'm not having my kid attend this. And they've been threatened, and the kids have been threatened with expulsion from the school and all this kind of nonsense. And it kind of like, it opens up a much bigger can of worms because you think, well, okay, who is doing this? What is it all really about? What's behind it? What's the power that's driving this? You know, what is it really all about? Because they're trying to sell it to us as a part of the pride thing. This whole gay pride thing and everything. And I'll be honest with you, I have real difficulty with the pride thing. You know, they say pride comes before a fall. But I can't understand how a gay person would think, you know, there was pride or something, you know, that homosexuality was something to be proud of. Now, my oldest son is gay, and I've done work, I'm self-employed, I'm a contractor, and I've done work over the years for a whole number of gay people, and I've sat down and had coffee with them. And, you know, just chatted about them, chatted about how they feel, you know, their life and all this kind of stuff. And I remember one guy in particular who was in the year above me at school. I can still remember his name. Alan Scorgie was his name. Now, I built a waterfall and a pond in this guy's garden. That's what I did for him. And did a bit of landscaping as well. And he was absolutely delighted with the work we had done. And, you know, he was giving me cake and beer and everything when I was working there. I mean, I wasn't just myself. I had a small team helping me, you know, do the work. But to say he was absolutely delighted was an understatement. You know, he was just... anyway... We had a couple of beers. When I finished the job, we had a couple of beers in his conservatory. So we're just talking about stuff and looking at the water cascading down the water feature and everything. And he was asking me about my sexuality, you know. And, you know, I was just like, I said, well, the whole homosexual thing's never even crossed my mind. It's just like, I says, frankly, I can't understand it. I don't get it. You know? I just don't understand it. Because I'm a normal heterosexual guy, attracted to women, you know. But he was unusually candid and frank with me. And he said to me, I'll never forget it. He said to me, oh, you know, all these gay folk you see in the street, you know, they're holding up banners saying, you know, glad to be gay, and gay is just as good as straight and all that, and all this happy, happy stuff. And I went, yeah, of course, you know, and he went, it's just nonsense. He said, every single person I know in the gay scene in Aberdeen, that's the city I came from, male and female, he said, they're desperately unhappy. They're not happy at all. They're putting on a front. And he said, most of them suffer from depression. And he said, they don't want that to get out. You know, they don't want that truth. They don't want that fact to get into the public domain. And he said, a lot of this, you know, gay pride thing and everything is just a reaction, an overreaction to how depressed and lost that they feel. And he said a lot of the flamboyance and a lot of the overreaction and even aggressiveness, you know, is a direct what would you say, every action is an opposite and equal reaction, you know. And this is their counterweight, if you like, to how they're really feeling inside, you know. This is the reality of it. Not always stuck in my mind, you know. Not always stuck in my mind when he said they were all desperately miserable and suffering from, depression and getting medicated for depression and everything. And he also said he felt trapped. And that he'd tried a couple of times to be heterosexual by simply going out with a woman, dating a woman, and hoping that the desire would somehow... he was even engaged. I think he said he got engaged because he thought it would improve the connection he had with this woman, but it just wasn't happening. He said he felt quite repulsed. He felt quite repulsed when... you know, they got closer physical, much the same way as I would feel with a man. That's what he said. That was his point. So I think that, I mean, that was from the mouth of a gay man. Then he proceeded to tell me, I was quite shocked. Then he proceeded to tell me that his male lover had been battering him, had been beating him up, and that you know, he was regularly getting kicked in by this guy, and they had been, you know, they had been together and split up and together and split up a whole number of times, and he was just like, he was just at the end of his tether with their relationship, and I mean, they were living together, and his partner, if I remember right, his partner was a successful accountant, and you know, making good money and everything, so they had the best of everything. You know, they had the big BMW sitting at the door and all the best of furniture and all this kind of stuff. But I just, yeah, I just remember that. And it's funny because I seen my own son growing up, you know, and he wasn't sure, my gay son, and he wasn't sure. In fact, he was, you know, he was kind of celibate until he was 19 or 20 or something. He, you know, he hadn't had any kind of sex with male or female, but he just knew he was attracted to boys, guys, you know, rather than girls. And I remember him saying to me, it's quite funny when I repeat it, it's quite funny when, you know, when you actually speak it out, but I remember him saying he found female genitalia quite disgusting, a vagina and stuff quite disgusting, and, you know, horrible to look at. And I remember thinking, wow, such thoughts had never even crossed my mind. Now, I've mentioned in previous shows that very same son of mine he was allergic to, he had a mild allergy to breast milk, and it was causing problems. So they tried him on formula milk, and that was even worse. He had a strong allergy to formula milk. So they put him on soya milk. The product was actually called Y soy. So we were getting like six of these big tins of soya powdered milk every week. We were really, I mean, I've actually still got some in my workshop, because they were quite a sturdy can, and they're handy for nails and screws and stuff. And I've still got some of them. You know, a can maybe 8 inches by 10 high. Just a circular can with a good strong plastic lid, and like I say, they're handy for keeping stuff, you know, odds and ends, keeping stuff dry and everything. So, but that was the name of the product, Y Soy, and it was soya milk. Now, soy has been connected to feminizing men. It apparently attacks, or sorry, no, it mimics. That's what it does. It mimics the female a hormone, estrogen, which in turn attacks the male hormone, testosterone. So, I strongly suspect, I mean, I don't know for sure, because you can't prove these things, but I strongly suspect that one of the reasons my oldest son is gay is because of formula milk. Now, another thing I've seen as well, this is an interesting point, that gay chap I did all the work for, by the way, I went back, I think three times, and did work on three different properties he had, you know. So, and I was brought up in the same area, although we weren't friends, I was brought up in the same area as him. So we had a kind of kinship, you know, apart from anything else. But anyway, one thing I noticed when, I remember going down to his, he had a guest house at one time, and I remember going round to his guest house, and it was in the West End, it was a nice, you know, it was a nice place. I remember going out to his guest house to pick up a check, to pick up some money, and his mother was there, and I couldn't believe it. His mother was like, oh gosh, he was really overbearing. you know, she was really like flamboyant. Oh, she was talking in almost poetic terms about and then when he appeared, when Alan appeared, you know, she was preening him like a, you know, like a monkey picks her a lump of skin off its, you know, its mate. It was a bit like that, you know, and she was like swooning over him and making a big fuss over him and, oh, you know, and, oh, what do you want for your tea? Oh, I'll do this, I'll make you a beautiful tea. And it's just all kind of over the top. And I remember thinking to myself, his mother is part of his problem. I remember thinking that to myself, this overbearing, flamboyant, loud, overprotective woman is part of his problem. You know, all very precious, very grand, very precious, very loud, in your face and everything. Not unpleasant. You know, not unpleasant or nasty or any of that stuff. In fact, almost sickly sweet, really. But I remember seeing that, and I remember just taking a mental note of it, you know, and thinking to myself, gosh, I felt kind of sorry for him, you know, that she was making such a fuss over him. Now, I can't remember if he was an only child or if he had siblings, I can't remember, but I do remember thinking, crikey, that would that smother love, that over-the-top smother love would drive me insane, you know. I couldn't cope with that, you know. I'd be like, leave me alone. But I seen, in my own marriage, I seen the same thing. Not to such an extreme, I have to say. Because I was a sobering influence, if you like. But my ex-wife, she was a bit like that. I mean, okay, it was our oldest son, you know, the first one. So you tend to be a bit overprotective and a bit, you know, what would you say? Just a bit over the top with your first one, you know, because it's all new to you. And especially when they're just babies, you're always worried, you know, that something will happen or they'll, you know, you hear about caught deaths and, you know, all of these childhood ailments and everything. So you tend to be a bit, with your first kid, you tend to be over the top. You tend to be overprotective and everything anyway. But I just noticed there was aspects of the same maternal kind of over-the-top maternal thing going on with my ex-wife and my son, you know. She used to fuss over him something terrible. And almost treat him like a little girl. I often thought that to myself. But like I say, I mean, it's all new. When you're a young married couple, your firstborn, it's all new, everything's fresh. There's no dress rehearsals. You've just got to get on with it and do your best. So obviously nobody's gonna, you know, no couple of parents are gonna be perfect in the way they do things, you know. And if you try too hard, that is a problem in itself. And I've just illustrated that with the overbearing mother of my customer, Alan. So yeah, I've seen aspects of that in my own marriage, and you know, this overbearing, you know, flamboyance, this overprotection thing, and I think that's got something to do as well, you know, all very precious and stuff. I think that's got something to do with feminizing boys, you know, rather than just letting them, you know, go out and get on with it and, you know, get dirty, come in with bruises and everything. And, it's a boy thing, you know, get covered in mud and get soaking wet, falling in the stream and all this kind of stuff. And the odd bloody nose because we've gotten into fights and stuff. I mean, that's a normal sort of upbringing for kids. But certainly, coming in dirty, I can remember I can remember getting into trouble loads of times for coming back home with dirty clothes, dirty face, dirty hands, sometimes smelling of smoke because we've been lighting fires in the woods and stuff. It's normal boy stuff, you know. You can't you've got to let boys be boys. And let girls be girls, you know. This whole transgender thing is confusing people. And this drag queen half hour of the drag queen story time thing, it's just absolute madness. So they're obviously, it's obviously another attack on the family. It's not an isolated thing. It doesn't stand alone. It's part of a sick and sinister agenda, for sure. And they've been at it for years. Now, I'm not just talking about lefties here. I'm not just talking about mad liberals. It's not just a political thing. And to call this just a political thing is to oversimplify it. Grossly oversimplify it. There's an evil, satanic element behind this. It's a spiritual thing. And the same people, the Masonic educators, the same people, have been trying to break up the family since the late 1950s into the 60s. And they've been doing this, well, first and foremost, you had, and we touched on this last week, but you had a whole cultural movement of music and media, and then behind on the back of that well, was over sexualization of girls, you know, the miniskirt and everything came in the early 60s, and then you had the feminist movement, and at the same time the engine driving all of this stuff was rock and roll music. Rock music, rock and roll, call it what you like. And suddenly there was all this new genres of music. I mean, I remember it in the 70s. There was just an explosion of all different. There wasn't just rock or rock and roll or, you know, country music or whatever. There was an explosion in new genres, jazz, funk, you know, acid house, and you know, there was heavy metal, and then you had behind that you had what they call death metal, satanic rock, and they were all at it. There was, to be honest, there were so many different genres of music suddenly exploded in the late 60s, early 70s. There was loads of bands, it was just too much happening. There was loads of bands that I had heard of, you know, I'd have the names, but I'd never heard their music. And it took me until the 1980s and 1990s to catch up with all the 70s bands. For instance, Deep Purple, Uriah Heep, and Wishbone Ash. I remember them. I remember them, you know, in the early days, but it wasn't music I'd had a chance to listen to, because I was already listening to, you know, 10 different other bands that, you know, that I got into. So there was an explosion of different genres, an absolute explosion, and subcategories. There was all different subcategories, and even sub-subcategories. You know, categories within other categories. It was bizarre. It was absolutely bizarre. And as I say, we just didn't have the time to listen to everyone. There just wasn't the time. And there wasn't the internet either. So if you didn't hear something on the radio, if you just heard them discussing the name or whatever, or you had friends discussing the name or whatever, unless you went out and bought that record and put it on your record player and listened to it, the chances of hearing on the radio, because there was such an explosion of different bands, hundreds and hundreds of bands, if you didn't hear it on the radio, you probably wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't get into it. That's what happened to me. And even the Led Zeppelin, to some extent, I'd never really listened to them in the 70s and 90s. I got a chance to just sit down and, you know, go back over loads of the bands from the 70s that was in my era, but I hadn't had a chance to listen to. But my point is, the music industry was being driven by the very same people, the social engineers, the very same people, the Masonic elite, who are trying to pervert everyone, and then, which obviously, you know, well, perversion and homosexuality and everything divides families. So, of course it does. But so did feminism. You know, if you could get some power behind the feminist movement, it would obviously cause a widespread marriage breakups. And that's what happened. That's exactly what happened. And that's what the social engineers. That's exactly what the social engineers were doing, and it was all very subtle, and it was all very clever. And it was being sold to us through the media as well. And I'm talking about films and documentaries and everything. You know, so-called pop culture, the trendy media. So we were being sold this idea through the media and through, you know, plays and dramatizations and stuff, that basically there was no right or wrong. There was no absolutes. One of the expressions, and it came, quite a few bands actually used it as a line in their songs. If it feels good, do it. I've seen that on t-shirts even back in the day. If it feels good, do it. Well, think about that for a moment. Loads of stuff that feels good are completely wrong. Completely wrong. But anyway, they realized that you can pretty much sell anything. To anyone, if you do it in subtle, you know, subtle ways, subtle terms. And that's what they did. That's what they were doing very, very clearly. And it was like a three-pronged attack, because we were getting it coming through the television and the radio and at school. We were getting it from every angle. It's so obvious that they're the very same people that's behind the LGBT thing. We know who they are. We know what they're about. It's not like, you know, it's not like we're stabbing in the dark here. We know there's a tidal wave of immorality washing across the world. Some would say Lucifer is rising. Lucifer is rising. It says in the Bible, woe unto those that call good evil and evil good. Now that's exactly what they've done. These social engineers, it's taken them 30 years to do it, but they've achieved their goal. Now everything that's bad is cool. The kids go, oh, wicked, wicked. So wicked means cool, which means good. But wicked is also bad. It's bad to be wicked. Blaspheming as well. The amount of blasphemy you hear in popular music and in popular culture. And it's getting worse. Some real sickening stuff, you know, some real tacky, twisted stuff.
But it's like the wave washing away at the stone, you know? You don't really notice much difference. Until, you know, you maybe go back 10 years later and you realise that water washing against that stone has completely changed its shape over a 10-year period. It has eroded. Stone has eroded. And that's what's happening to society. We have become like the frogs in the hot water. We have become eroded morally. Totally compromised morally. Because we've been socially engineered to be compromised morally. And you hear it all the time, you know. You hear, even in humor, even in the form of jokes, we're getting the same ethos, the same immorality peddled to us, sold to us, in different guises. So, that's a drag queen story time thing. It's just the latest attack on decency and morality and the family unit. Just imagine for one moment. You know, your first year in school, you're 5 years old. You're 5 years old. I remember it really well. I remember my school had a weird smell. I couldn't, you know, it was a scary smell. I just remember the smell of the building. It had a very distinctive smell. There was two or three different smells in the school, but it was a smell that hit you as soon as you went in. It was a modern school. It wasn't some old dusty building full of, you know, it wasn't like that at all. It was a modern school. And there's a modern housing estate I lived in. But I can totally remember the smell of the school for some reason. And I can totally remember the smell of the... We learned to count using these wooden... We called them rods. And it was to teach us hundreds, tens, and units. And I think it was something that was split right across the world. You got a little cube, it was a one. And you got a little blue oblong, twice the size, that was a two. And then it was a three, which was a, you know, a third longer again. That was a three. And it went right up to different colours, greens and, you know, blues and whatnot, right up to ten. And these rods, they were made of wood. They were all dyed wood. They had a distinctive smell as well. And I can remember I quite like playing with them, but it was clever. It was to teach us hundreds, tens, and units, you know, and how many units there was in a seven rod or an eight rod or a nine rod or whatever. And it was actually good because it made you, as you got older, you know, third and fourth and fifth year at primary school, you got an understanding of the hundreds, tens of units and numerical columns and stuff like that in your head, because it was color-coded for you. You know, units, a unit, if I imagine a unit, even now, as a middle-aged man, if I imagine a unit in my head as opposed to, you know, a 10 or a 100 or a 1,000, a unit's always, in the brain, is a white cube. Like a dice without any dots in it. My point is, though, when you first start going to school, you're very, very impressionable. And a lot of these things that you see and smell and touch and feel will stay with you all your life. Now, just imagine for one moment some strange guy come into your midst wearing woman's clothing and a stupid wig and big false eyelashes and over-the-top tacky clothes, talking in a deep male voice. but wearing stiletto shoes and stockings, and started reading stories to you. What the hell would that do to you? It would really, really confuse you. That's what it would do. It would really confuse you because you're just trying, you're just, at that age in life, you're just starting to understand the differences between the sexes and the roles of the sexes and everything. Even at that young age, the boys and the girls played with different toys. You know, we used to have some downtime and you just get to play with stuff. You could bring in your own toys. Or you could play with some toys at the school. You know, they usually had an educational kind of edge to them. But nevertheless, boys went for boy stuff and girls went for girl stuff because there's different items interest different sexes. Obviously there is, you know. Obviously there is. A lot of girls' toys are aimed at motherhood. Motherhood. And, of course, housekeeping. And that's what mum does at home, you know. That's what mum does. Mum cooks. Mum cleans. Mum fixes clothes and all this kind of stuff. And dad goes out to work. So a lot of boys' toys, and dad usually goes out to work in his car, you know. So a lot of boys' toys are centred around tools and cars and work. Whereas women's a lot more toys and what they play with is a lot more geared towards homemaking, baking, cooking, you know, nurturing, nursing, all this kind of stuff. So there is a huge divide, you know. We're not the same. We're not the same. God made us completely differently. Different things make a man tick or a boy tick from what make a girl tick. Now, when you're 5 or 6 years old, you don't have the first clue about sex or sexuality or whatever. You don't. You just don't. You don't need to know. You're a kid, for goodness sake. You don't need to know. It's not until you're like 12 or something, or 11 or 12, you know, that you start to become curious and ask questions, and, you know, you start to build up an understanding of these adult matters. And that carries on into your early teens, you know, and then you pretty much grasp it. But it's a long, slow process, you know, and we didn't really, well, we got a little bit of school. I remember a program came out when we were about 11 or 12 at primary school. They had a program that all kids in the UK got to see at school at that age. It was primary 6 or 7. And it was called Living and Growing. It was actually very good. It was actually very good. It was well presented. It wasn't tacky. It was educational, but not, you know, it wasn't giving you all sorts of information that you couldn't process. It was all broken down in quite simple terms, but nevertheless, it gave you a clear picture of what sex was and what, you know, family life and pregnancy and all this was about. And that was good. No, it was fine. There was never any complaints about that. I remember distinctively, as a 12-year-old, thinking, I already knew everything. I had sort of picked it up, you know. I was the youngest of three, and I was a very curious kid. So I wasn't much for me to learn from Living and Growing. But nevertheless, it put it in easy-to-understand terms and some kind of sequence, you know, and give some kind of moral authority to the whole thing. It wasn't a whole bunch of random sexual stuff stuck in a box, shaken up and put over your head. There was a sequence. It taught you to understand courtship and marriage and all this kind of stuff. It was good, you know. No problem with that at all. What they're trying to do now in school is absolutely disgusting. It's mind-blowing. They're passing dildos around in the class. They're giving lessons on anal sex. It's actually buggery. It's actually kind of listed as an alternative, a viable alternative to normal sex. It's just mind-blowing what they're doing with the kids. And this drag queen story time is very confusing for our kids. It's destructive. Of course it's destructive. Anybody that says drag queen reading stories to kids for an hour every week or every day or whatever it is, anyone who says that's not destructive and confusing to a 5 and 6 year old needs their head examined. Of course it's going to confuse the kids. It's going to get them asking all sorts of questions that don't even need to be asked. Why is that man dressed like a woman? Why are they even here? Why do we need a man dressed as a woman to read our stories? Why? Why is he doing that? It's a mockery of femininity. That's what it is. It's a mockery of femininity. And it's an attack on decency and normality. That's what it is. It's disgusting. And it's part of a social engineering program that's coming from the New World Order. And that was the same people that sold us feminism. The same people that sold us the gay movement and rock and roll and all that stuff. And it's all for the same ends. And the goal for them is to break up the family. Because the strength of a nation is its moral fiber and the family unit. So if you can break down people's morals and break up families, it makes people much easier to control because they are vulnerable and they're splintered off. They're not part of anything else. They're making you want to cleave to the state, to look for your love and your nurturing and your validation to the state, because your family's broken up. They've already seen to it that your family's broken up. Now, it's all really subtle. Again, we touched on this last week, just how subtle it is. And just how complex psychologically it all is, and how to sell it to us and persuade us that drugs are good. Sleeping around is good. Cheating on your partner is good. Having sex with the same sex is good. None of these things are good. They're all bloody destructive. They're all extremely destructive. They cause heartache. They cause heartbreak. They cause division. They cause divorce. And the only people that really gain from that level of social engineering is lawyers and bankers. Because division and sale of properties, which is a natural consequence of a divorce, is very costly. So they pursue once they've split up a family, you've got all these single parents raising, or trying to raise kids against all the odds. Without the valuable and essential input of the masculine, the father, all these fatherless children don't don't have the same solid security of the family unit. The balance, the perfect balance between the masculine and the feminine, the male and female energy, is essential to good mental health. So yeah, that's what they're about. That's what they're doing. And it's working. It's became actually trendy. There's people online. I've been reading different blogs and stuff about it. There's people online defending, actually defending these, you know, gay freaks parading down the street, waving it in their face, with dildos sticking on their, sticking at their heads and all sorts of, you know, insane flamboyant behaviour like that. You know, it's not cool. It's not clever. It's tacky. It's cheap. It's pathetic. And we don't want it in our midst. And if you want your kids to be brought up into a world like that and educated by bloody transvestites and stuff like that, you will reap a really bad harvest. Your kids will grow up confused, not knowing what the hell they're doing, not knowing what normal is and what right and wrong is, and they will get messed up at quite an early stage.
Hello, Graham. Looks like we have a caller online.
All right. Yeah, fire him on, Richard.
Okay. Hello, 864 in South Carolina. You're on with Graham Sutherland in Scotland.
That's me. Yes. My name is Donovan Humphreys. And
hi, Donovan.
I listened to you last week, and I'm listening to you this week. I was referred to you by a friend of mine that listens to you religiously.
Okay, what's his name?
Stephen Douglas Whitener.
All right, yeah, great.
And I don't normally call into places. I get kind of nervous, so forgive me if I stutter. I'm 28 years old, and I'm bi.
Right.
And even though that I'm bi, I don't push myself onto others. I don't push myself into, if I had kids, I wouldn't be pushing my, what would you call it?
Sexuality.
My sexuality onto them. And I don't understand why you would take and give a whole room of kids, let them be read to by somebody dressed in drag.
I know. That, I know.
That, me, is mind-boggling.
Yeah, I mean, what's the purpose of it, you know?
And I called in to just say hello and to express some of my concerns. And what you were sharing about here recently, that they're passing dildos out in class and teaching them about anal sex.
Yes.
At what I could understand, maybe high school seniors?
Yeah.
That be a class? But is your, I don't know what, I didn't catch what age group they were teaching them.
It's like 12 and 13-year-olds.
No, that's too early.
Of course it is. Of course it is. They've not, you know, they've not even reached a point in their lives where they've got a balanced understanding of anything, and they're being taught about anal sex and, you know, passing dildos around and being taught about orgasms and everything. I mean, they're just, it's wrong.
My experience with that, it was eighth grade. We went to another facility that we learned about sex. But it was the reproductive organs. It wasn't the act.
Yes. Yeah.
And you know, if it, like I said, we was on up 15, 16 years old.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You're starting to have a bit of a clue by that age, and maybe even had a relationship or two.
I've got a cousin of mine. Her 10-year-old has a porn addiction.
Right.
And
well, porn's
I know
another
where that
aspect
came.
Of it.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, porn is another tool in the arsenal of the Masonic elite that's behind all of this. Porn, the LGBT thing, the feminism thing, you know, it's all the same. It's all just different symptoms of what they're trying to push.
Right.
Porn's a big one, actually.
What about these people who were taken? They were dressed in drag, and their children were dressed in drag. And that goes back to what I said just a few moments ago. They let the kids learn by themselves.
Yes,
I had to. I had to go out and. Did I like pussy? Yeah, I like pussy. Did I like dick? Yeah, I like dick. Maybe I'm both ways. Try that for a little while. You know, see who I am. I had to go out and learn me. And I think that it should be left up to the kid at a certain, as you know, I don't know. I think it should be left to the kid to get to know him or herself.
Yes, gradually, over time.
Right.
But they have to have a childhood, you know. There has to be a period in a human's life where they stick their finger in that electrical socket and they get a bad shock and they realize they should have listened to their parents and, you know, not stuck their finger in that electrical socket. And they wouldn't have got that shock. And that's just part of growing up. And sexuality is part of that too. It's a thing that just happens gradually. And I think if you force it and start forcing your ideals on kids by saying you've got to try this, you've got to try that, when they're only 5 or 6 years old, it's unacceptable.
Right.
Sorry, I had a call coming in there. I just had to reject it. But yeah, I think we've got to let children be children. That's the bottom line for me. Let the kids be kids. You know, they don't have to be even thinking about all that stuff until, you know, after puberty.
I agree with you.
May I join the conversation, Graham? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you clearly. Jump in.
Yeah. Oh, great. Hi. Yeah, this is Stephen Douglas Whitener, and you know, I completely agree with everything you've said the whole time. It's just obvious that it's an agenda to push the disruption and the breakup of the family. They want to destroy Western civilization. It's no less a goal than that. They've been working at it since at least for 100 years, since the introduction of feminism, and you can see how far it's come to the point where they're pushing this graphic sexual education younger and younger. I think what they want to do is push the age of consent younger and younger, so that at the end of that LGBTQ, they could put a P, you know, and they could say, oh, you know, love knows no age. That just like the NAMBLA, Man and Boy Love Association, they're trying to destroy the family. And like you said, the family is the fabric of the nation. And, you know, they don't want us to have any loyalty to each other, so that we are tools for those that benefit. You pointed out who benefits the most, the bankers and the lawyers. They're the ones at the very top who, you know, they just deal with us as consumer units. And I believe that, that is their goal. And I believe that the next thing is to normalize the pedophilia. They want to make it normal to see a man and a boy out in an obvious sexual relationship. Otherwise, why would they be having these pride parades? Something that you said prideful for a guy to be swinging his junk in a little kid's face, you know, and have him dressed up hypersexual. It's like, and that's something they want to take quote unquote pride in, you know. It's like, I think that a little bit of humility goes a long way in a society, especially in a family. And the way that you put that, Donovan, when you said to go out and get a little of this and a little of that, see who you are. I mean, that just shows the point where our society was at that point. You're 28. It was not, and I suppose that, you know, kids were doing the same thing when we were teenagers, me and Graham, but it wasn't looked at. It wasn't quite as open and in your face and accepted. Right. Or, you know, a man my age, well, a man in his 30s trying to go out with a teenager, you know, that would happen sometimes, but those guys, you know, they ended up in prison, and they don't want that to happen anymore, and they want it to be younger and younger kids. I believe that's what they have in mind, that's their plan.
Definitely, yeah, you can totally see it happening. And I don't know about in the U.S., but we've got a couple of really popular soap operas here. In fact, there's three. There's Coronation Street, there's EastEnders, and there's one called Emmerdale. Now, these are soap operas with like 10 million viewers. They're on two or three times a week. And in each of these soap operas, there is gay and lesbian couples. Loads of them. Way too much. Way more than you'd get in one street. You know, or one neighborhood. And there's a lot of kissing and stuff going on. You know, male and male kissing, female and female kissing. They're pushing it even through these soap operas. They're trying to sell it.
I've seen EastEnders myself, and the same thing's happening in the media here. I read an article this week where a poll conducted showed that Americans believed that there were probably 6 to 7 times as many homosexual and lesbian people in society as there actually are, that they're portrayed so strongly in the media that the media not only normalizes it, but, you know, they have 3 or 4 gay people for everyone there would normally be in these shows. So people just assume, well, that must be the way society is, even though in their everyday life, they don't know that, you know, unless they're, you know, part of that lifestyle, they don't know as many people. But that perception, they've changed people's perception to the point where they think they're like 30. I saved that article, but yeah, it just shows that the agenda is successful, that they've been successful at changing people's perception of the way society actually is.
Yes. Yes, to help.
I'm going to type in.
Sure, go ahead.
Talking about changing people's perception, you know, when I was a kid, if somebody had proclaimed that they were flamboyant, they'd get hit in the face.
Oh, yeah.
And I was flamboyant, I guess you could say, when I was younger, and I got knocked out of my bar stool. And the hate that was then has been transcended to acceptance today. But where do we draw the line? Acceptance and no tolerance. The reason why I say this, Americans have this thought that life is free, that we can have free speech and this, that, and the other. Now, I understand that I'm an American, and I'm fixing to say something that's going to step on some people's toes. But when you give people the freedom of everything, where do you start drawing lines when in writing it's said one way, and when the government takes that writing and twists it for everybody?
Yes.
The Constitution was originally written for freedom of religion from people overseas. Stephen, help me out here.
Well, to prevent establishment of a national government-sponsored religion here, it was illegal for our government to establish a religion. You know, we could allow. It didn't say that. I do believe that they've gotten this wrong, where they try to say that the government has to be this wall of separation. It's just that the government could never endorse one religion over another and say, this is the state religion, and this is what you have to worship. We were given freedom, and now they've distorted that. The left has to turn it into freedom from religion, that if anyone has, you know, a word to say to you, you know, they don't have a right to express themselves to you, especially if they're a Christian. I have another article here about a Canadian man whose face is 2 years in prison just for passing out a pamphlet and telling people at a gay pride parade that Jesus loves them. I mean, it just, you know, now that's Canada. That's not the U.S., but I do believe that that's the way they want to have it here. I heard this Congresswoman, Frederica Williams, on the news just this week saying that she wanted to shut people down who were making fun of anybody in Congress. You know, I mean, who does she think she is, you know? This clown that wears this, she wears this rodeo-looking cowboy hat and this disco clothes. And she's, you talk about flamboyant. This woman's flamboyant. She stands out like a sore thumb. But, oh, don't anybody notice now. If you notice, then we, the government, want to shut you down. I mean, she's been in the media saying that people need to be shut down, and she didn't say arrested, but that's, I mean, how else are they going to shut you down? It goes back to the censorship, where they want to get everybody off Facebook or ban you on YouTube if you're a Christian or if you're a conservative. And, oh, my God, heaven forbid, Donovan, you know, a bisexual man calls in and says, well, it's not a good idea for drag queens to go and read, you know, have little toddlers sitting on their lap in the library. Now, oh, you're not allowed to have that opinion, not in the eyes of the left. You know, they don't want free speech or free thought. They want to control thought and control speech. I mean, that's what it comes down to. I mean, that's basically what's happening now. We've reached the point here in the U.S. that with Antifa in Portland, that they're making their move, that, you know, they're beating people in the head. This guy, this is a gay man, this fella, No, it's spelled NGO, who is a journalist, was out there just covering the Antifa and the stuff that they did. They put him in the hospital. He's bleeding in his brain. And the police in Portland watched it happen. The mayor is defending these actions and preventing the police from coming in and interfering, the same way that they're protecting people going in to the library to read this drag queen story hour. I forgot the exact place it was, but somewhere in the Northwest, Oregon and Washington, the police actually participated in that in the event. Similar to what I had Kenny Bartholomew on last week. He discussed the drag queen story, not story hour, but drag queen strip shows that they've been having in Denver, Colorado. And it's all ages. They're bringing kids in there. And these guys have, anonymous, with the Guy Fawkes mask, some of them and some of them without, have been out filming the people coming in and doing this, trying to hold them accountable. And there are two Denver police there protecting these people, you know. I believe it. I mean, we are right in the midst of a civil war right now. We just haven't started shooting at each other yet.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
Yeah, I can see that. Man. Yep, absolutely.
And it's not going to be over slaves this time. This time it's going to be over. Oh, he said something to me that just offended me just a little bit. I'm going to shoot him. And
exactly.
And then it started right there.
And the police were just letting them do that and get away with it. That's what shocks me, is that they've just let things go. I listened to a show you did, Graham, about Seattle is dying, and in that show the police had stood down there. They're just letting people. They're not arresting people for anything more than a minor misdemeanor anymore, and that people know they can get away with anything. And that's that whole attitude has spread to Portland and to Dallas, Texas. The same thing's happening. That's spreading all over the country. They're turning us into the Weimar Republic over here, the way it was.
Yeah, that's right. Then,
you know, yeah.
They won't arrest them. What's that thing? They won't arrest them if they're found with up to 5 grams of oxycontin or heroin or speed or coke or whatever. Up to 5 grams, they're just letting them go, because if they charge him and put him to court, the court will let him go anyway, because they're never going to pay a fine, and you know, they've been in jail, you know, 30-40 times, so it's not working. The system has crashed.
Absolutely, it's broken. Any place that the Democrats have been in control for a good period of time, that's the end result. That's the fruit of that tree, you know. And I can't. The Republicans do better than that. I mean, I've got problems with them too. But you can see these blue states—they call it blue—where the Democrats have been in control. It's just all going to literally to shit because there's so much poop in the street. You know, San Francisco outlawed e-cigs I think 2 days ago. So you can't have an e-cig. You can't have a plastic straw, but you can shoot heroin and poop in the street. That's fine. That's our San Francisco. You know, that's where we find us now. And I do believe that something's going to happen to confront this situation this weekend in D.C. They're going to have a standing up for free speech rally. I don't have all the particulars on it, but I believe it's going to take place on Saturday. And there are people who are coming together. They've been banning people off Twitter and off of Facebook and YouTube. Joe Biggs, for one, and other people, the Proud Boys, they are going to confront the Antifa in Portland on the 17th of August. So things are definitely coming to a head here. And, you know, I don't know how it's going to go down, but, things are going to be out in the open, and the conflict's going to be laid bare here in the next couple of months. And you can see the media, CNN coming on, and they're defending the actions of Antifa, going out and beating these people up. Cuomo and Jake Tapper are saying, you know, if you're about punching a Nazi, well, you know, that's not all bad, right? It's like Nazi has become the new N-word. You call anybody that doesn't agree with you a Nazi, and it's okay to go and punch them. And the media is perpetrating that. They're trying to make it okay. They're trying to, you know, stir this up and spur people on to get these little self-righteous snowflakes, just like you were saying, Donovan, like, oh, you offended me. I'm not, I'm going to punch you. And then, you know, and it's on. And as soon as if they do that, and if a conservative or just a straight person, a normal person fights back at someone doing that, well, they become the bad guy. You know, to defend yourself is considered, you know, an affront to these people. They will attack us. That's a tactic that the left uses. They get up in your face and they'll come pushing through. They'll, excuse me, excuse me, excuse me. And then when you defend yourself, well, you're the bad guy. It's coming to a head. I think we're going to have a very eventful summer here.
Yeah. Listen, I think something that's worth mentioning here. I've noticed it. It's happening in the U.S. in a big way. And it's happening in the UK as well here. We've got the left blaming the right and the right blaming the left for everything. And the right seems to be becoming more right or more polarized, and the left seems to be becoming more left and polarized. And all of a sudden, there's a different change. There's a change in the wind. They're seeing the left are seeing the right as the enemy. And the right are seeing the left as the enemy. And, that's social engineering in itself. But you've got to remember, these are not just political matters. These are spiritual matters.
These are deeply spiritual matters. You've got Satanists behind all this. You've got Satanists behind segregation. You've got Satanists behind this divide and control. Oh, he's black. You've got to hate him because you're white. You're white? You're black? You've got to hate that guy because he's white. You know, you've got to hate him because he's a Muslim. It's all about divide and conquer. They don't really care. You know, they don't really care about all that stuff. All they want to do is divide and rule, because once they divide, fighting will start in the street. The civil war will start. And then that will give them the excuse to introduce their martial law police state. That's the goal. And these people...
They're out of chaos. Yes.
Don't forget the fact that these are spiritual matters, and these people are evil. They're on the side of Satan. That's the bottom line.
I agree with you, and the answer to this, I don't believe, is to become to the left wing, is to become more right wing and fight amongst them. But I saw a picture posted that I believe the possible answer to this is. There's been some folks I've interviewed in an organization called DontComply.com, and then over. Today, I don't know when this happened. I think it was today. Some of those guys went out, and I assume it was in Texas. They were armed, carrying AR-15s, and they were protecting the new Black Panthers and their right to protest. I mean, that amount of unity right there of people coming together and saying, look, we have these rights, and we're going to exercise them, and, you know, the state and the empire be damned, standing up in its face. If there's any hope at all, I believe that would be what it is. And if we can have, you know, I've read how common ground is what we have to find, or, you know, it's going to continue along these lines. And I didn't mean to step on you there, Donovan. What did you want to say? I heard you start to speak, and I talked over you.
I started to say that if you believe in biblical times, you know, the Bible says that there'll be wars and rumors of wars in the end times.
Yes.
And we're there. We're trying to keep peace with everybody around us, plus keep peace with ourselves. And it's not working. None of it works. We've got... What is it, Northern Vietnam, that we're trying to coerce into signing a nuclear treaty with Trump right
Iran.
Now?
Iran.
Well, no.
No.
I say North Korea North was in
Korea?
There, too.
Okay. North Korea, okay. Yeah, he did walk. Go ahead. Yeah, he did walk to Carlson, talk to the guy in North Korea.
Okay. He's trying to find peace with Iran. It's just... Everybody's on an edge globally that it's inevitable that we're going to all go to war with everyone. It's not just United States. It's not just these people, them people. It's all of us.
Yeah.
And it's going to be survival of the fittest.
It also says in the Bible that just as they're saying peace, 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 suddenly war, all out war.
Yeah, peace, peace.
Right.
There is no peace. I agree.
That's biblical as well. And they're speaking about peace treaties with Israel and Palestine, and they're speaking about peace treaties between, you know, North Korea and South Korea and all this kind of stuff. And it's all about peace. I get a strong feeling we're in the end times, right? No question.
Things, they're matching up with what I've heard all my life.
Yeah, absolutely, in a most uncanny fashion.
And the mark of the beast is certainly, we're carrying that around in our hand. And I was watching a report last night that Facebook is working on technology that can read your mind literally, that you'd be able to think something that you want to say and that they will type it out. They even demonstrated the technology of a computer reading someone's mind and speaking what they wanted to say. And they've been working on that for some time. So, you know, at that point, you know, there's not a private thought left in your head. Even 1984 is obsolete, that where the only space you had of your own was between your ears, and that would be gone. It's a nightmare scenario there. I believe it does look dire. I had found the thing that I wanted to quote about what possible way to confront this was with that relates to the Don't Comply fella, Murdoch Pizzgatti, and the new Black Panther. It says, peacemaking doesn't mean passivity. It is the act of interrupting injustice without mirroring injustice. The act of disarming evil without destroying the evildoer. The act of finding a third way that is neither fight nor flight, but the careful, arduous pursuit of reconciliation and justice. It is about a revolution of love. And someone had sent that to me, and okay, you know, it sounds all like pretty words, but what else have we got at this point? You know, the only other option I see it is to take up arms and start shooting at each other, and I don't want to do that. For one thing, I'm not as good a shot as I used to be. I'm kind of old. And another one, I have grandkids, you know. I want them to have a world to grow up in. Yeah. I don't want this all to come pulling down around us. I mean, to stand up against this, we have to stand up like men against this and say, look, this is wrong, and what you're doing is wrong, and we oppose you, but, you know, we're not going to come over here and hide in the bushes and draw a bead on you and try to blow your head off, you know. No, we're here, we got to stand together. It's like, we are not each other's enemy. Our enemy is over there trying to divide us and conquer us, just as you said. I believe that's what we have to do.
Yes, that's right. But they have been very successful in polarizing people in terms of their politics and their religion. Or even if they're atheists, the atheists have all become very religious about their atheism. So everybody's becoming very polarized and quite extreme, and forced to be, kind of forced to be, you know, make a stand. What are you? Okay, you're an atheist. You've got to be a good atheist. You've got to be a strong atheist. Really stand up for the cause. Be an evangelical atheist. Everything. We're all becoming really polarized and stuck, and almost exaggerated versions of ourselves, and being encouraged to be exaggerated versions of ourselves, because we have to have an enemy. We have to have someone to hate.
Yeah, it's like I think we've been programmed into this, you know, that the mainstream media and the schools, they've been programming people toward this for 100 years. And it's very difficult to fight against it. It takes determination and steadfast courage. It does, and I hope that's present. I know there's some people. I mean, the guys that I talk to in the Don't Comply thing, and the guy interviewed. I mean, there are people out there who are trying to do something, and there are also, of course, the people who say, "Okay, well, we're going to go and we're death to Antifa," is their response. It's just like in 1979, the Communist Party back in Greensboro, North Carolina, they were holding these huge death to the Klan rallies. And they were out there chanting death to the Klan. They hung them in effigy and stuff, and they were on the TV, on the news. I mean, this was 1979, and this was just there was a reporter out here covering. It wasn't as big a deal as it would be now with the media showing it. And then an FBI informant drives up with some Klansmen. The Klansmen get out and start shooting the communists. And then eventually, then everything blows up. It doesn't go from there. But, you know, the approach, it was the point I was making is it was an FBI informant that brought them in, you know, kind of, you know, caused the whole thing. It was manufactured from the beginning. Yeah. Some of these other things look manufactured in the way that Charlottesville looked manufactured. And this thing that's going to happen this weekend and the 17th of August, I don't know, it troubles me a lot. It seems to be manufactured as well. And I don't know who's behind what, but we have to stand up against that somehow. You know, when they're shouting at the barricades, somebody, I remember in the early 70s, there was a, a book that I had called The Soft Revolution. It was from 72 or 73, maybe. And it just, I know it was talking about all, you know, but at the time there was a lot of the same situation going on with the, in the street. In fact, not exactly the same, but the Vietnam War was going on. It just, it had a big poster in it that said "Power to the Peaceful," and a person with an olive branch in their fist. There was some good resources in that book. I mean, things like that we have to try to pursue, or we are going to end up in a shooting war. And I don't want my grandkids to see that. I don't want them to suffer through that.
And, no, but that's certainly the way it's headed, Stephen.
Yes, I agree.
Certainly the way it's headed. I think, you know, we don't want to face it. But it's kind of inevitable. It's kind of already started happening.
Yeah, I'm afraid that it's, you know, they will start shooting anytime. You know, it just... And once they, you know, that will give them the excuse to bring in the martial law, just like you said, and to crack down and do away with the Bill of Rights. Yep. That's what the authoritarians and the bankers want. No
that's
freedom.
Exactly
and,
what,
like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's exactly what they want.
Control.
They've even published it, you know. It's not like it's some kind of, you know, out there conspiracy theory. They've actually published that that is what they're going to do. They're going to cause division through race, religion, and ethnicity and politics. Cause division, division, division. You know, who cares, really? You know, what someone else is doing or what someone else thinks. At the end of the day, what does it matter? And it's like sexuality, you know? Who cares? You know, if you're doing something behind closed doors, just do it. Enjoy it. Do it quietly. I don't need to know about it. It's none of my business. They're kind of like dragging everything out of the closet and, you know, like rubbing it in your face and, like, you know, almost exaggerating everyone's positions and trying to agitate people.
I think that's exactly right. The same way that they have exaggerated the number of homosexual and lesbians in the media, that people have gotten the perception that there are a lot more than that. You look at there are other agendas that they exaggerate, like no normal white heterosexual or even black heterosexuals, you know, families that are of the same race. They all got to be four, you know, different races, or they got to be something different. If there's a family unit portrayed in the media in a commercial or something, it's just, it's obviously agenda driven to the point that you don't ever see just what you would consider as a normal, healthy family on there. They just don't ever show it anymore. I mean, could you imagine Leave It to Beaver or Father Knows Best today? I mean, people would just think that was from Mars.
Yes.
That's pretty sad.
Yes. Yeah, but yeah, you can clearly see them working on it, though. Really, really working on it. Even in popular music and everything, we are being mind controlled from every angle.
I agree.
Well, fellas, I'm gonna get off here.
All right.
Listen, it was nice of you to come in. Thanks for joining the show. You know, come on anytime. You're welcome. You're welcome back.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Donovan. Thanks
Bye-bye.
For calling.
Thanks, Donovan. Good night.
You're welcome.
All right.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a friend of yours. Is he, Stephen? Yeah.
Someone that I know locally, and I had actually mentioned to him that I was going to be doing a similar topic, you know, and, you know, to have the perspective of a bisexual guy there. And like, I said, yeah, you can call in. I told him that we'd like to hear what he, cause especially because he doesn't go along with this agenda that they're pushing, you know. It's like, he said, that's wrong. You know, it's like, he wouldn't do that to kids. And I don't think any normal person can, I don't see how they can defend that. I mean, how can you defend some, and these people, they don't do background checks on them. You know, they come to the drag queen story hour and we've found convicted pedophiles in there, you know, and
Yeah.
I don't see how you can defend that. And people are trying to defend it. If for us to point this out, they say that we're hateful bigots. That's just,
yes.
It boggles the mind. I don't know. I don't know what's become of us.
Yeah, that's right. That 500 mum strong group who have stood up in Spokane, Washington, group of mothers who've taken to the streets to show their opposition to this drag queen story hour. One of the spokeswomen said, and I thought it was fantastic. She said, "See if I can find it." Yes, the Spokane Public Library, South Hill, has decided to host a drag queen story hour on June the 15th at 2 p.m. This is misogyny. Drag queens are very offensive to women. They are grotesque, hypersexualized caricatures of women. They mock women and debase our womanhood and femininity. A drag queen is no different than a racist donning a black face, she continued. The library hosting such... Sorry, Stephen, just another paragraph.
Yeah.
The library hosting such an event teaches our sons that women are just sexual objects, and it teaches our daughters that they must be overtly sexualized to be desired. Enough is enough. We say no. We say no more to this political agenda aimed at degrading women and sexualizing children. We say no to gender appropriation.
Oh, good for her. That's great. I hope that word. I bet she would be banned from Facebook for stating such a hateful thing. You know.
I'm
going to work that out. Yeah.
Stephen, it actually gets worse. Listen to this next bit.
Okay.
Soon after the 500-strong mum group went live on Facebook, it was inundated with misogynistic and sexually explicit abuse from drag queens and their supporters across the country. Bolach told Lifestyle News by phone that the abuse has continued. "We're getting death threats daily," she said, "and they even threatened to rape my husband."
Oh, my gosh. The tolerant left.
I know.
Oh, man.
Wow.
It shows the atmosphere that we have that's in the country, the polarization that's present. I saw there was a little girl who had a parody account. She was like a little bitty Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She kind of looked like her, but she's like, I forgot how old, she's maybe 10 at the most. She's very young, and she had a parody account, and it was hilarious. And she's getting all these death threats now, just similar to just what you described, that she had to shut it down and remove herself from social media. Her parents wouldn't let her do it anymore. There are a lot of people. Anyone who speaks out against this, they're coming hard. You know, it's a dangerous time. It is.
They had police snipers on the roof. I couldn't believe it. There was a heavy police presence, including snipers on the roof, because of false accusations from a rival Facebook called 500 Drag Queens Strong, that had made death threats against them.
Wow. Oh, they had one of those story hours here locally, next town over, and there were two different opposing groups protesting it, but it didn't get to that level. Some of the people who worked for the library were fired after this too. They were kind of let go because, you know, that didn't go over as well here. But still, it went over. I mean, it happened. It took place, and just the fact that it's taking place all around the country, it boggles my mind that that's where we are today. You know, that's the point in our history that we are, that things have deteriorated to that level, I don't know if that was the one, it was the same place where I had seen that the police were actually taking part in the drag queen story hour. I think that was in Tacoma instead of Spokane, but, you know, it's like, yeah, I don't know. I just, like you said, if people, what they do behind closed doors, you know, their business is their business, but they don't want to keep it their business. They want to come push it right in our face. It goes back a few years where they started, it started, well, it's 50 years since the riot at the Stonewall, that gay club, and they were fighting with the cops back 50 years ago, and it's gone from there. Slowly, they did away with any laws against sodomy, buggery, or your homeless. You know, any what people did in the privacy of their own house. Eventually, that was okay. And I'm not opposed. I don't want to go bust down anybody's bedroom door. That's ridiculous. I don't want to live in that kind of a society either. But it went from there to where, okay, we want to get married. The lesbians and homos say, we want to be married too. We're a family, and nobody wants to tell your kids. What harm does it do me if they're married? You know, it's like, what harm is that going to cause us? And I myself, I don't think the state needs to be determining marriage, like giving licenses for marriage at all. But, you know, okay, so we go along with that and say, all right, well, now it's legal to do that in the whole country. And what's next? Well, anybody can use any bathroom they can. The gender doesn't exist. You know, it's just one right after the other. They keep taking more and more. It's a satanic, just like you said, it's a satanic agenda where good is bad and bad is good. That's exactly what's been happening, and we've reached that point. I agree with you completely.
There's another thing as well is quite interesting here, Stephen. I've got a gay son, he's 29 or something now, and he said, you know, I was speaking to him about the gay marriage thing, you know, when homosexuals could get married in America and everything. There was, they debated the issue on the air, on the radio and on the TV. They were debating the issue for months and months and months before it happened. And then, of course, they had the rainbow colours and floodlights on the White House and all this kind of stuff.
Yes.
My gay son, Ross, he said to me, it's a lot of nonsense. We don't care. Marriage makes no difference. You know, we're gonna be with our partner, live with our partner or whatever. We're gonna do it anyway. There doesn't need to be a marriage thing over it. It's just a whole lot of nonsense. And he says, frankly, we're sick hearing about it.
Yeah. I believe he represents a majority of people who are, you know, just normal. It's like this stuff is being whispered, I don't know, programmed, you know, subliminally maybe. It's just an agenda-driven people. All this money coming behind, you know, they've got to be lots of money, big money behind all these drag queen story hours. They're paying they got to be paying these people to do this. And I believe that, like you said, it's satanic. It definitely is an agenda. Most of the people who are normal don't care about it, but the powers that be that want us divided and conquered, they're the ones that are pushing it, not people like your son or Donovan or you know, just your neighbor down the street, you know, that you don't even know is gay, who minds their own business. But that's not good enough for these sociopaths, the social engineers that want to change our society and their satanic image. That's right.
Yeah. I mean, they just want to live quietly. They don't want to always be defending their sexuality and talking about their sexuality. They just want to get on with their work and pursue their work and do their hobbies and just have normal family time and everything. They don't want to be crusading down the street and everything. That's the social engineering. It really is.
I agree. Most people just want to live their life. You know, they want to have a better world for their kids and their grandkids. I mean, that's normal human nature. And all this other stuff, it's very, very evil. And I don't know. I think that it's coming to a head, especially between now and the 2020 election. But for this summer as well. Yeah.
I mean, you never, you know, if you meet someone or even someone, you generally, you know, you wouldn't say to them, you wouldn't have a conversation. like, you know, what are you into sexually? You know, what's your fetishes, or what turns you on, or what, you just wouldn't have that conversation. So why do we need to hear about what homosexuals are up to?
Yeah, I agree.
You know what I mean? Why do we need to hear about it? Why do we need to even be discussing this? It's because it's being shoved down our throats. That's why.
Yeah, and because they want to destroy the family. That's why they're shoving it, I believe. That's right. Part of it's the almost, divide and conquer.
Yeah, but it's almost like it's been force-fed onto us to such an extent that it's actually becoming really annoying. It's becoming really aggravating. We're sick hearing about it. There's much more important things in the world to get concerned about than someone else's sexuality.
Well, I believe that might be part of it, too, that since there are more serious issues, they want to distract us from those more serious issues. They can't have us looking into the war agenda and how they're ramping up, to go to war against Iran and Venezuela, they can't have us looking at that. We're going to be distracted with all of this other stuff. It's part of that too, I believe. Mm-hmm.
I read an interesting article today, Stephen, about just that. There is apparently a CIA group a task force being appointed to try and stir up trouble with Iran, because the American diplomats, the American politicians who are over there, you know, the American Iranian people, if you like, the Iranian, you know, politicians and whatnot, they've gotten too comfortable. And they understand and sympathize with the Iranian people too much, because they've been there for so long. You know, they understand the culture, and they become Iranianized, if you like. So they've appointed a special task force to try and stir things up a bit, and it's the CIA that's doing it.
It just harkens back. They've done that twice before, with in the 53 with Mossadegh, when they took him out, and they've been attacking them from inside for a while, killing their scientists and stuff. And I know that the Israelis were doing that, and the CIA had probably been shut out to some degree after 79. But that's not a good sign. It means that they still plan to attack Iran, and I don't know. It seems like if Trump is really a peace person, you know, if he really wants peace, then make peace. And I don't know why he's got Bolton in there and Pompeo. That's just, I don't know. It's more than I can figure out. I don't know what's going to happen, but I know it's very scary. Pardon?
Pompeo. And the other guy, what's his name?
Bolton, sorry? Yeah. Bolton.
Bolton, yeah, they're both war hawks.
Very much so, yes. I don't know why he would have them in there. If he's pursuing peace. Now, supposedly they were in there to deal with North Korea. But, you know, they definitely want to go to war with Iran, and they want to overthrow this guy in Venezuela. I mean, Wesley Clark had the list of countries that they were going to go after, you know, and there they are. It just seems like the next domino to fall. They met some resistance. They haven't been able to overthrow Maduro in Venezuela. The Venezuelan people are not as they're portrayed in our media at all. They're very patriotic, and they definitely, most of the people there support Maduro, and most of the economic hardships due to the sanctions that we've placed against them, that and the plummet in price of oil. But when it comes to Iran, when have they invaded their neighbors? You know, I think the last time they invaded any country was in the 1700s, right before 1800.
300 years ago, yep.
Yeah. But look at the list of interventions that the U.S. has carried out. I mean, all the countries that we bombed and invaded are sponsored coups in. You know, it just, I don't know, and there we're doing it again, sending them in there to try and overthrow the regime now. Yeah, I don't know. If Trump is a peace president, he needs to stop that. Somebody, anybody, if anyone, the only person close to standing up and saying it is Tulsi Gabbard, you know, saying that these wars are unnecessary. And, you know, even her, she's a member of the CFR. And so, you know, she's the only person that even mentions it. And so, I don't know. I mean, I think it's, unless something drastic happens, we're going to have Trump again. And I can only pray that he'll find a way to bring about some peace instead of continuing all these wars. They're going to end up just like Donovan was saying, with everybody fighting everybody. Just go, it could all just go up in smoke. A couple of days ago, there was a scare that this Russian sub that had the fire, and other people were saying no, a Russian and an American sub exchanged fire, and one of them was hit. And I haven't seen any evidence of that. But at the same time that this Russian sub accident, quote unquote accident, took place, well, Mike Pence, who was going into New Hampshire, canceled his trip and came back to D.C. The First Lady, Melania, she got on an airliner and left for an undisclosed location. The Israeli military returned to base for briefings. The EU had a quick conference, and the Russians had a quick, and all in the same 30 minutes. You know, it just was surreal when I noticed all those reports, and I was telling the guy riding with me, I said, "You don't believe this," and it was spooky, because I mean, I know, okay, is this it? You know, are they, if they exchanged fire and you know, duck and cover, you, who knows? You know, that was the fear I lived with growing up, that those missiles were going to be launched, and you know, that was it. You know, it was going to be the end, and we don't have that same fear as present, you know, in the media today. They don't talk about it as much, but you know, it's the possibility still there. You know, it's the as far as we know, the weapons are still armed and pointed at each other. So, you know, it was pretty scary that moment, and I don't know what's going to become of it, but that it's very troubling. They say that they've formed a group to you know, bring down Iran, basically.
Please stick around for at least part of Steven's show.
Oh yes, please. And I'm gonna hang up and join back on the Uber conference. I enjoyed it very much, Graham. Thanks very much for having me.
Listen, thanks for joining us, Steven, and indeed inviting your friend to call in there. That was really interesting, and it was quite refreshing to hear a perspective from a bisexual male, you know, and that's the kind of stuff we were covering, the content we were covering. It's been an interesting show. A lot been said, a lot of points been raised. I would just say that the hour is getting late. That's my feeling. The hour is getting late, and there's certainly an outpouring of evil, and we can see it all around us, you know, and a lot of it, it's like, it's so much, it's so strong, it kind of, you know, it's scary, it doesn't make sense, or whatever, and when you look at it in political terms, it's very confusing, but we'll have to remember, as I said earlier on, these are deeply spiritual matters, and there is a spiritual aspect to this. And it is satanic, and that's what we're up against. So we don't need tools fashioned out of steel. We don't need weapons fashioned out of steel for this battle. We need hearts, pure hearts, dedicated to God and dedicated to right and righteousness. And that would be my final thought, or you know, sort of closing statement on the matter. We have to get right with God and realize what side we're on, because we have to understand the dynamics of the battle, and not just observe. We need to be warriors rather than observers. So anyway, with that, I'm going to close. I'm going to hand it over to Stephen Whitener. He's on next. I'll probably be guesting in his show as well. I'm certainly going to hang around as I was invited to. But yeah, it's been a great show. Really interesting. Moved really fast. And yeah, I would just like to thank you all for joining me. I'll be back next week sometime.
with the 21st Century Jacobite. My name's Graham Sutherland, and I'm signing out. So for now, I'll say good night and God bless.